We're looking behind the scenes of the Caitlin Clark Show with Iowa Athletic Director Beth Goetz. Plus, the WNBA is flexing its newfound power, and the baseball season kicked off in Korea as MLB looks to grow internationally. It's Thursday, March 21st. I'm Owen Poindexter, and this is Front Office Sports Today. Before we get started today, we have an announcement. Throughout March Madness, we will be giving away one Front Office Sports hat each day to a listener who leaves a review on Apple for FOS Today. Email a screenshot of your review to owen@frontofficesports.com and you could get a hat just in time for spring. Again, just leave a review for this podcast on Apple, screenshot it, email me at owen, O-W-E-N, at frontofficesports.com and you might get a hat. Time for our weekly check-in on the sports media world with tuned-in columnist Mike McCarthy. Welcome, Mike.
Great to be here.
Great to have you on. So the WNBA is starting to flex its muscles in its media rights negotiations. What's the story here?
Well, they've come a long way, baby. The WNBA is tired of being an afterthought in the NBA's media rights deal. Right now, the NBA and WNBA are jointly negotiating with ESPN for the next set of media rights. But as we reported in Front Office Sports, if the WNBA doesn't get what they feel is market value, they're prepared to go on their own, either talking through the ESPN themselves or talking to other networks, giant streamers. They have a point. The NBA had a very good year, very good season last year. You got Caitlin Clark coming in, Owen, and right now with the total of $60 million a year, their total media rights fees is comically low compared to men's leagues.
Yeah. And do you have a sense of what kind of numbers they're looking for?
As usual, leagues are looking for whatever they can get. But I would think that a bump up to the $100 million range is definitely in sight. The NHL makes 10 times what they make in media rights every year, and the WNBA regular season games nearly equaled NHL regular season games in viewership. So there's a huge disconnect here in the rights they've been getting. I think the WNBA realize it. I think they're frustrated about it, and they've been waiting for this opportunity for a long time to make things right.
Sticking with ESPN, but to a very different sport, ESPN just signed a new six-year, $7.8 billion deal with the College Football Playoff. Wanted to get your reaction there.
Yeah, give it up for the worldwide leader. They kept Fox's snout out of it. ESPN and Fox are the ruling duopoly TV-wise in college football, and I thought that Fox had a really good chance of nabbing a piece of this. But in the end, Disney's deep pockets and ESPN's long relationship with college football won out. At the same time, though, there was a little known codicil, as they would say in the agreement, that says ESPN can sublicense some of these games. So what they can do is they can sell off some of the first round games that aren't that valuable to a Fox or somebody else and get back some of the money that way.
Last thing I wanted to hit with you, NBC is planning sort of an NFL red zone style show to bounce around to the most exciting moments at the Olympics hosted by Scott Hansen. I think this is a great idea. I wanted to get your thoughts.
I think it's a fantastic idea. For 20 years, football fans were waiting for the two red zones to finally come together. And who knew that it would be at an Olympics game? Scott Hansen is a huge personality, extremely popular. And then you got Andrew Siciliano. So you've got the two hosts of the two differing red zones pushing Olympic coverage. I think it's also an example of the red zonization of sports. People like whip around coverage. It's like, give me the check. Give me the news. Give me what I need to know. I don't want to sit down for 2 hours. I just want the highlights. I want the scores. I want the goals.
And for the Olympics, it makes all the more sense because I don't know if I'm going to, like, suddenly, like, the shot put gets really exciting, or, like, synchronized swimming is like, the thing. But going in, I have no idea what is actually going to capture my interest and where the suspense is going to be. So, yeah, why not have a show dedicated to saying, like all right, like, this one's petering out. Let's check out what's going on over here.
I've got two questions for Hansen, though, Owen. Is he going to be able to use his famous 7 hours of commercial-free Olympic starts right now? And is he going to go to the bathroom during the show? He's famous for his camel-like discipline of never going to the bathroom while he's doing the red zone. So I'll be curious if he keeps that up in Paris.
Mike McCarthy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lurie are still on track to buy the Minnesota Timberwolves and Lynx after a 24-hour period where those plans were thrown into flux. The pair's ability to come up with the money was briefly called into question when private equity firm The Carlyle Group, which was expected to put up $300 million to back A-Rod and Lurie, pulled out of the deal. The pair quickly swapped in Dyal Home Court Partners, a division of global asset management firm Blue Owl, that also owns stakes in the Atlantic Hawks and Sacramento Kings. A-Rod and Lurie have already purchased 40% of the team at a roughly $1.5 billion valuation. They exercised an option to purchase an additional 40% in January. The $300 million from the Carlyle Group was supposed to contribute to that second 40%, and that payment is due at the end of the month. The sale will be official once it's approved by the NBA Board of Governors. The baseball season has begun. The Dodgers and Padres played the first two regular season games of the year in Seoul, and it turns out that in South Korea, baseball is a different kind of fun than it is in the U.S. There are drums, there are dancers, every player has a fight song, and all of that was very audible for anyone stateside who woke up early enough to watch. This game also featured a concert by the K-pop group aespa and a light show before the game. Korea's first four games of last year's World Baseball Classic averaged 1.8 million viewers in Korea alone. That was a 35% increase from the WBC in 2017. This is just one stop in MLB's World Tour this year. The Rays and Red Sox played exhibition games in the Dominican Republic earlier this month. In April, the Astros and Rockies are playing in Mexico, which will give the Rockies a chance to experience baseball at an even higher elevation than Denver, and the Mets and Phillies are headed to London in June. The WBC provided yet more proof that baseball is incredibly popular in many parts of the world, and MLB is looking to meet that fan base where they are. Iowa's women's basketball team brings sellout crowds everywhere they go, but at the day-to-day level, there is an athletic program trying to ensure the best experience for its athletes and the long-term health of its teams. I spoke to Iowa Athletic Director Beth Goetz on what it's been like to play host to the Caitlin Clark Madness, and that conversation is coming up next. Business of the Madness is brought to you by Acura, which is now introducing the all-electric ZDX, crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars. The ZDX is Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy at Acura.com. I'm joined now by Iowa Athletic Director Beth Goetz. Welcome, Beth.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no. So thanks so much for coming on. So when we look at this, the story of this college basketball season, for all of us, I think it starts with Iowa, and it really starts with Caitlin Clark breaking records, drawing massive crowds everywhere she goes. As someone who is much closer to all of this and, you know, has a hand in some of it, I'm wondering if it's the same basic story for you or something a little more nuanced.
Well, you know, we get to see it up close and personal. So, you know, it's been an incredible ride. But we, you know, we also get to see the Caitlin and the team that are, you know, our college students. And we get to see them in their own natural environment when they're not entertaining the rest of the country right now. But it's been, you know, a different experience for all of us and the people it's attracted to our arena. The attention it's brought to our university has been incredible. And you just can't say enough about their talent. But also just the character from which she, you know, she leads from every day, how she speaks into supporting the game, trying to grow the game. She lifts up her teammates and is just an incredible ambassador for the university.
Yeah. And it's a good reminder that these are college students, you know, and they have full lives off the court. Has it been a wholly positive experience for them to be getting all this national attention, or are there some challenges there, too?
You know, I wouldn't want to speak for that group of young women, but I, you know, what I've heard them say when asked similar questions is that it's, you know, it's a privilege, and they understand that. Well, they want to, by the way, they want to give back. They want to be great role models for these, you know, young girls and young boys. And they understand that that responsibility is theirs. And so I think they're appreciative that they get to be in those roles, but certainly recognize that, you know, it is another layer of expectation on them, but one they certainly welcome.
Hmm. And what has it meant for the program as a whole to have all this excitement following the team?
Well, I don't think you can understate what this experience has been like for them. Really going back to last year as that momentum grew and their run to the Final Four. But, you know, this level, this year's just been at a different level. And so, you know, they're just trying to take it all in. You hear them say this all the time. I mean, that group genuinely enjoys being around each other. They love playing the game of basketball, but they're a family. They function like that. And they've just welcomed so many others, certainly the Iowa fans, but welcome so many others across the country to kind of take that ride with them.
What direction do you want to take this in, especially as, you know, Clark is moving on to the WNBA? You know, what are your sort of high level long-term thoughts here?
Yeah, well, you know, I think not just for Iowa, but for the game in general. I mean, this is, you know, this isn't just a building block. It's been building over time, and it's reached this culminating moment where it's grabbed and captivated the attention of so many. And so our goal is just to continue to build on that, to use this opportunity to showcase the great game and the great individuals and teams that are going to follow, you know, follow Caitlin and her time here. And I know that's what, you know, certainly she wanted and what Coach Bluder wants for our program here with the Hawkeyes, but across the country, is just to allow this game to grow and to keep those fans that we've attracted during this run engaged in what we're doing going forward.
Yeah. And how do you keep those fans who, you know, might have tuned in to watch Caitlin break the record, or just, you know, knew this was an exciting team that people were getting pumped up about and they got, you know, swept up in that hype. How do you keep them, you know, certainly through the tournament, but, you know, next year as well and the years after?
Yeah, well, you know, it's anytime you're trying to attract fans, it's always intentional, whether in football or baseball or women's basketball. And so there's work you do around the outside to showcase what you have coming in. But how can you not watch the game and be entertained? I mean, they've seen an incredibly high level of basketball here at Iowa. There are other stars across the country right now, and so those games are really intriguing. You're seeing upsets. I mean, this is probably the deepest women's basketball NCAA tournament we're gonna have an opportunity to see, and I think people are going to be excited about that. And in terms of Iowa, you just look at what Coach Bluder has done here and some of these amazing young women we do have returning to our rosters next year. I mean, who doesn't want to come watch Hannah Stolke play? Just the, you know, the love and passion she has for the game. She's attracted her own fan base and many of her others. Sid and some of the others have just done incredibly well. And so, you know, I think we've invited others in. They've seen what you have to offer and they're going to want to continue to support the game.
Mm-hmm. And in January, the NCAA and ESPN signed an 8-year deal worth $920 million for a package of 40 NCAA championships, including Women's March Madness. That tournament accounts for $65 million of the $115 million annually that deal will bring in each year. What is that going to mean for your program and for women's college basketball going forward?
Well, I think it's wonderful to see that, you know, it be valued differently. I think we always knew anecdotally there was a value to this particular women's championship. And so really meaningful to everybody involved in the sport, I think, to see those numbers. And, you know, it's still yet to be determined exactly how those funds will be used and distributed. But I think, it just shows where the game has gone. And I certainly anticipate it'll be looked at a little bit similarly to how the men's revenue coming in. But I do think it shows value, and it's just a way to show how far this game has come over time.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, I have to tie it, you know, not like one directly led to the other, but that's coming on the heels of the, you know, the final last year between Iowa and LSU that brought so much interest and hype. And I think was, you know, really was the story much more so than the men's tournament. You know, they had their own tournament as well. But I feel like last year was the year where it went from, you know, everyone's focused on the men's tournament, and, you know, if you're a bigger fan or your school's in the race, maybe you also tune in for the women's tournament. You know, maybe that's historically what it was, to the women's tournament is a thing. And, oh, by the way, the men are also playing.
Yeah, I don't know how everybody's going to view that. And we certainly, if you're a basketball fan, we're going to be all in on watching March Madness for our men and women. But how amazing that so many eyes have been open to what the women's tournament can be about and how exciting those games are going to be as well. So, I think last year's championship was probably just the start. We've continued to just see record numbers from, on different broadcasts and different TV partners throughout this season. And I think that's going to continue through the championship run this year for the women, to be sure.
Yeah. Next season, the Big Ten is adding UCLA, USC, Oregon, and Washington. You're getting four West Coast schools. What is that going to mean for your program?
I think it'll be wonderful for women's basketball in particular. I mean, you've got, some really good teams coming in, just like everybody else, I'm sure. Excited to see this great young phenom that USC has and Juju Watkins and have those, have some of those athletes in our arenas and have a chance to go out and compete. But the Big Ten, obviously one of the best conferences in the country, and we're just getting better with these additions. So it's going to be fun, I think, for our fans to follow and, really exciting, intriguing to get some new matchups and new rivalries going.
Yeah. Is the travel a concern for you?
Yeah, we've been really thoughtful about that. I think the Big Ten Conference has been really thoughtful about it. And certainly for Iowa, it's not materially going to impact how we, how we operate. Most of our teams, including basketball, were making a West Coast trip in a year, usually non-conference. And so, it looks like it'll be one West Coast trip for us. And whether or not we go back at another point in time in the year, I think it'll be an open question. But we think we'll be able to navigate and provide our student athletes the support they need when they do get a chance to go out there.
And so obviously we just got through that big round of conference realignment. There's still some talk that maybe the dust hasn't fully settled. Do you think the Big Ten is the right size right now? Could you get bigger? How do you sort of see all that?
I really think, a moment in time is probably a shorter window than we used to talk about it being the next, 5-10 years or whatnot. But I do think we're in a really good place right now. I think our commissioner's done a really good job of helping us navigate the landscape in his short tenure. And as, we move forward together as a collection of our group, I think we'd have to be really, really thoughtful before you made any other decisions. But I think right now we're in a really great place and we're excited to welcome those four new members in and get rolling with that group.
Recently, Dartmouth basketball players voted to unionize. Just what's your reaction to that vote?
Yeah, I'm a believer that students should have a voice. And I think watching them have the ability to speak into what their experience is really important. And then I think you're going to have to let let those processes play out. Obviously, I wouldn't be able to speak to an experience at a private institution and sort of what how they all view that, the student athletes and the institutions. But, as we maneuver this new landscape, I think there are ways to provide increased benefits to student athletes, to make sure their voice is incorporated in what we're doing, and to continue to support all of our programs. And the question just is, in what format is that going to look best? And so we're all anxiously following and engaging in those conversations and are excited that we're going to be able to find some resolution. It's a little bumpy along the way, to be sure. But I think if we're keeping that student athlete experience in mind, looking to pivot and understand that the landscape has changed, we need to find ways to really share those resources differently with students, I think we're going to land in the right place.
That's just one of several challenges to the amateurism model generally. Is Iowa preparing for a world where, we might see student athletes getting paid not just through NIL, but more of a regular salary and maybe even are collectively bargaining through a union?
I think all of us would not be doing our jobs very well if we weren't starting to think about what those different models could look like. And, clearly there's not a distinct path to any one of those directions just yet. But I think most of us are doing some modeling about what that could look like and make sure we're ready to pivot when that time comes.
And I mean, we already have sort of a quasi version of this, not for every player, but through NIL and through collectives and boosters, we're getting something along the lines of there's a pot of money and some of it's going to these athletes and in effectively as an inducement, not quite a contract yet, but along those lines. does having this sort of in-between world, is it helping you kind of, does it make it less of a big step to go to full employment and unionization?
I don't know if I would have characterized it that way. I think most of us would prefer that, regardless of how quickly we could have gotten there, that whatever framework you're operating in, you want it to be consistent and really clear. Right. And so we're in this position right now where you've got some ambiguity. You've got different state laws. Everybody's operating a little bit differently. Some, ever changing NCA rules and some of those have been suspended during at least with the most recent injunction. And so I don't know if it makes it easier or not, but I think, you've been able to conceptualize this over the last couple of years. And arguably, maybe we should have been conceptualizing it well before that. But I think everybody's going to be prepared. And at the end of the day, whatever that looks like, you just want it to be consistent and have a clearly understood framework that's going to apply across all of our participating institutions.
What do you want to see as we kind of figure out what this looks like?
Yeah, without getting into any details, I mean, I'm really saying the same thing I did before, which is a consistency in rules. I think the ability to provide additional benefits, whatever you want to call that, revenue, salary, however that plays out, to student athletes. I think, you want to be able to better utilize their voice and make sure that that is speaking into the system. And you want an opportunity to ensure that opportunities outside of revenue sports can continue to be had and experienced on our campuses. Maybe I need a big wand to do all of those things, but I think, if you can package those up and regardless of what format is, I think it'll be a good outcome.
Beth Goetz, good luck on the tournament and thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks so much. Go Hawks.
That's it for today. Hope your brackets are in and not quite busted yet. Drop us a rating or review on Apple when you get a moment and send me a screenshot for your chance to win an FOS hat. Thanks for listening. We will see you tomorrow.